It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome to The Car Doctor Show. This is The Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text to 343-0106. Show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, Mobile's oldest GM dealer, Alabama Piping Supply, Atmore Dragway, SMR Automotive, and Ed's Seafood Shed.
Fantabulous Seafood Shed.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Still got good fresh seafood daily. Yeah.
I will be over there partaking of some good seafood between now and the first of the year, because otherwise all that anybody's going to have is turkey and dressing.
Exactly.
Or ham. I'd like to have a little variety in my life.
Yeah, well, you know, that's all good, too. But, you know, it's hard to beat seafood.
I keep suggesting to our family, let's have a seafood Christmas meal, and nobody will take it.
Uh-oh, nobody will take you up on it,
I guess not.
Yeah. Yeah, we've done that before, and we've done steak before. We've done a few different things for holiday dinner.
Seven-bone roast.
Yeah, so.
I had to crack a burro one time, you know.
It's all good.
Everybody got tired of cooking.
That's right.
That's another thing that I've been pushing too, but nobody.
Oh, hey, that's a good meal now. Crack a Burro give you, they get you some fine groceries over
and
there.
And I think, not to plug them, but I think they'll even cook it and pack it up for you to take it out the door.
And you know what?
Take it home.
You don't have to wash dishes over there either.
That's right.
No, that's the thing is, if you eat it there, you can just get up and walk out, and you ain't got to worry about cleaning it up.
There you go. So.
Or in my case,
well, the ladies, you know, bust their buns during these holidays, and you know, cooking for 2 or 3 days, and buying groceries for another 2 or 3 days, getting everything coordinated. Then you got to go to this party, and you got to cook this, and go to that party, and cook that, and you know, next thing you know, the ladies are all burnt out, and then they still got to fix the big dinner.
Yeah.
And then got to clean up everything after it's over with. Come on, you know?
Yeah.
Give the ladies a break.
Yeah, it's kind of like our Thanksgiving. It was a small group. There was only five of us this time, and we didn't have to go to any other houses. So it was wonderful.
That was neat. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. Still had a good meal and didn't have to run all over town.
Well, one thing is to take turns. Have it at this house this year.
Oh, no, that don't work. Next time. Yeah. Nobody does that.
Yeah.
We trying.
Yeah.
I'd rather do it at my house, and that way I don't have to go nowhere.
Yeah, but then you have to decorate the house up.
Oh, yeah, my wife's got that covered anyway. She's got everything. We have it's somewhere around 9 Christmas trees in the house.
Talk to you after the show to find out what your secret is, how you managed to work that out.
Christmas
tree. It's decorated from top to bottom. It's beautiful.
Do you have to put a gift under every one of them?
No.
I thought maybe that's what she was after, you know?
No,
she'd get more gifts.
No, well, Kevin told me he just ties a bow around his neck and lays down under one of those trees.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, knowing her, that don't work.
I'll be your present.
That don't work.
I don't know if that'd work or not, but I guess. Yeah, it's hard anyway. So
you might need to buy a new Chevrolet, put a big bowl around it.
She got one of those last year. She ain't getting one this year.
Spill. Hey, the year's not over yet, baby. What you talking about?
That's right.
She might hear you tonight. You might be buying a new one tomorrow.
No. We're still paying for that one, so it's all good.
You know, you pay that out of petty cash.
Yeah.
Off of your hip.
Yeah. No. My name's not on the sign out front.
So that's right. It says employee, not employer.
Right, there you go. But anyway, I know people are out there listening. We got some issues with their vehicles, so give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. There you're just going to have to sit around and listen to us all night. So
I read a good article this afternoon in my new hot rod book, and it was pushing an item about batteries, and it says, the first cable that you take off is the last cable you put back on.
Correct.
You know?
Negative cable.
Right. Negative cable.
Yep. Always take the negative cable off. But take the negative cable off first, then your positive, then take put your positive back on, and then put your negative on last.
There you go.
So it's less likely to arc out the wrench or whatever while you're connecting that last cable, and it doesn't matter if it's not, the other one's not hooked to anything.
It's like a lot of techs and mechanics won't wear a ring on their hand, while they're working on cars.
Yeah.
But they can short that out on a battery post or something while if you're messing around a battery.
Right.
Or a hot wire.
Yep. Let's see. We got a caller online. Let's see what we can do for him or her. What we can do for you.
And this is Mike from Irvington.
Hey, Mike.
I got my work car, I pulled the thermostat housing off, and when I did, I broke two of the 6-millimeter steel bolts that go into the aluminum head.
Okay.
They're sticking out about a half inch, so I'm feeling good that I can still grab them.
Right.
I wanted to pick your guys' brains. Tell me how you guys get a stuck bolt out of an aluminum block.
Well, first thing you need to do is you need to get some good penetrant oil and start soaking it down, and soak it down for a good day and just let it sit and just keep walking by it, spray it again. Take a hammer and just lightly tap on the top of it every once in a while just to kind of break it loose, vibrate a little bit. And if you have even just a small torch of some type, not something that's going to melt the aluminum, but just something that's going to put some temperature in it, put a little temperature in it, and then you can just try vice grips and get a good grip on it. Don't get something that's going to slip, because you can very easily just round off what's there and then just gently work it back and forth.
All I've got left is a 6-millimeter stud. When I ratcheted that counterclockwise, it spun the head right off that egg.
Yeah. It happens, unfortunately. There's that's a fairly common thing. And you just put a little heat in it and gently work it back and forth, and you'll feel it when it starts breaking loose, but don't immediately start trying to back it all the way out. Gently work it back and forth and keep spraying penetrant at it. And
you're saying penetrant. You have a brand? What do you find that works best?
WD-40 works well. PB Blast works well.
Okay.
Either one of those are two good penetrants. And like I say, you just need something that's going to penetrate down in there to break that rust loose to where it'll let it turn.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to be careful with this to not to break it off flush with the aluminum head and then have to drill it out and all that.
Man, you don't want to go there.
Yeah.
I know I don't.
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah,
but
not
it
on
can
that
be
little
done,
one.
But it, you know, you don't want to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, fellas, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. I appreciate you calling.
Yeah, he might have even tried lubricating it before he tried to.
You can't get the lubricant to the stud when the flat head
by the head
is uptight against that other component, you know.
Yeah, and it'll actually, I mean, you can sometimes get it seep in there, but you don't know that you need it until you try and turn it and it snaps off. And when you got a 6-millimeter bolt, it's just about not a bolt. Yeah. So it doesn't take long.
A follow up dumb question. So when you use your torch, you're heating the head around the bolt?
You're actually heating
the bolt.
Heating the manifold that it goes into, or head, whichever it is.
Yeah.
You're heating the aluminum part around the bolt, not the bolt, because you're actually enlarging the piece that's around the bolt, not the bolt itself.
Yeah.
So try and keep as much temperature off the stud that's broke off in there. But let's see, we have a text message here, and How low should you allow your fuel tank to get in cold weather? As far as it being cold, doesn't really affect where you're going to get your fuel tank to. One thing you don't – down here is not a big issue, but, you know, if you lived up north and you stood a chance of getting stuck in, you know, some icy conditions somewhere where you may be stuck on the road somewhere for a long period of time, I wouldn't want to have less than a half tank of gas in my car at all times.
No, I'm going to top mine off every time I run by a gas pump.
Yeah, because that way at least you have a heater going for a while. Yeah, but, around here, we're not going to get in those kind of situations. I mean, that'd be extremely rare. And if it happens here, I'm moving further south. So, you know, I just don't think that's going to be a big issue here. But, as far as the performance of the vehicle and that, it's really not going to affect it too much. We do have, a lot of cars nowadays, we have remote starts that you can crank your car up in the morning and let it run. Some of them will not let the car do that if it's too low on fuel. and you don't want to let it sit out there and run out. Even if it will, you don't want to let it sit out there and run out of fuel while you're warming it up in the morning. Can't get to a gas station, so just have to use a little common sense about it. But not a big deal. And we're going to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
Don't seem like a whole lot after 30 years of driving up and down the interstate. But Charlie's had a good life, and Charlie's got a good wife. And after tonight, she'll no longer be counting the days. 18 weeks.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is The Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. Have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Speaking of text, let's see, we have another comment on the fuel. Does condensation build in your fuel tank if it's low? It really depends. I mean, it is possible if you have a sudden temperature change and over a long period of time. You know, the key thing with all these cars is if you get them out and use them.
Right.
You know, the more you let them sit, the more moisture, the more corrosion, everything builds up and everything in the car. You get out there, run them, drive them, you know, get some temperature and everything, and it actually helps with all that immensely. The roughest thing on a car is just sitting. Yeah, if you got a climate control garage, no big deal, but not a whole lot of people have that. So let's see, we do have a caller online. Caller, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what can we do for you?
I've got a 06 Jeep Wrangler.
Yeah.
And I put a new thermostat in it, and now, every time I stop, I have overflow coming out. Don't know what's causing it. No, I put the thermostat in there right, mm-hmm. but it's just, and if I don't fill it back up with antifreeze, it'll run hot on me.
Right, right. You know, it's hard to say. When you're watching your temperature gauge and you're running down the road, is everything look right as far as the temperature? It's going to, say, midpoint and stopping there and staying steady while you're driving?
Yeah, it stays steady.
Yeah.
It's just when I stop and turn it off, I happen to look, and it overflow is coming out.
Yeah, yeah. I would probably start with replacing the radiator cap or having it checked to see what it is. Doesn't sound like it's holding pressure like it should.
I just bought a new radiator cap, one that's got the lever on top of it. My mechanic, it's Rick's Garage, but he recommended me to do that. I just seen him out, and I hadn't had a chance to take it to him.
Right.
But
right.
I stay pretty busy, and I can't because, Tom Claxton knows me. I'm Ricky Brown, so I stay pretty busy doing my work.
Tricky Ricky Brown.
When you say you got it, it's pouring out on the overflow. Do you have a overflow tank, or does it just come from the radiator straight out onto the ground?
Well, it comes from the radiator out on the ground. I do have an overflow tank, but it's not going into there. It's just coming out on the ground.
Then that tells me that you've got you've either got the wrong kind of cap, or a problem with the top of the radiator, because it should. You know, no matter what, you should have if you're overheating or whatever, it should actually go into the overflow tank, and then the overflow tank should be where the coolant comes from. It should never leak around the cap itself.
Right. That's right, Rick.
So look at your cap. And a lot of those ones with the flip lever, they're designed for one that does not have a overflow tank, and there's not a seal on the top side where you have the one that goes down in the lower part of the radiator filler, And then there's a second one that seals off the top, the outer edge of it up top. If that, if it doesn't have a seal around the outer edge there, you need to get the right cap for it.
Well, where would you get one? Because I went to AutoZone, and they said that's the only kind they had. Because I was, he told me to get one that held, what, 15 pounds of pressure, something like that, pressure on it.
Right, right.
And it's got the red clip on it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I just hadn't had a chance to take it to him and leave it with him because I'm doing a custom shower in Baldwin County, so I don't really have time to leave it.
Yeah.
I just have to keep filling it up with antifreeze.
Right. Well, you don't want to let it run hot for sure, but the original style cap for that definitely didn't have a flip lever on it. So I feel like they've given you the wrong cap. I would go to a different parts store and have them look it up by application and get you the one that's supposed to be for that car. Because there's many different radiator caps, trust me. There's more than just one. So,
oh, yeah.
To kind of go back, I did that the first time and got one without the lever on it, and they looked it up and just said this is the one it calls for. Well, that hadn't helped none, so then I happened to see Rick out, and he told me to get one with the flip lever on it, so that's what I did, and it's still doing the same thing.
Right. Right. Well, you may have a problem with the top of your radiator then, so you're going to have to get that part looked at because it should never leak around that cap. So,
all right.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. Tom, have a good one, man.
You too, brother. Good to hear from you.
All right. Y'all got a good show. I appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy. Have a blessed one.
Yeah, it's that's one thing. The way this cap seal off, it should be a closed system. And for it to be able to pull the coolant back into the radiator from the overflow, it has to seal off around that cap on the radiator. So because any air leaks will let it pull air because it's a whole lot easier to pull air in than it is to pull coolant in. So,
well, it's not working properly if it's not going into the overflow jug.
Right, right, exactly.
So it could have something wrong with the area where of the gasket sealing area,
mm-hmm.
like you're saying, with the radiator cap.
And I've seen a lot of it, and it may be a plastic radiator, it may be a copper aluminum, copper brass or whatever. But I've seen both of them get distorted, or even the plastic will kind of erode around just over time. So it need to look closer. I think that's
the
first problem.
Well, if he had to replace the radiator cap to start with, then that's when the problem originated. So he might have a disfigurement of that neck, that female neck that's on top of that radiator, as you indicated.
Yeah,
that caused that to happen before, because it should have been going into the overflow.
Right.
All that time. So maybe that's when it happened.
Right. Hey, I've had, as a matter of fact, my classic car. Has an aluminum radiator, custom radiator, a good radiator cap on it, but it did not seal off properly, and I had to go in there and reshape the opening just a little bit to get it to fit tightly and seal off.
You had
off.
To put a Kevin on it there.
Yeah.
Kevinitis.
Yeah, small tweak to it.
Yeah, so, Kevinitis.
But just to make it fit right. So it's, sometimes
how big
you have
a hammer
to
was that?
It was little hammer.
Little hammer, okay.
Yeah, it was aluminum. It's that thin aluminum. It didn't take
aluminum.
Aluminum. Yeah, it didn't take a whole lot to make it move. But, you just have to make sure everything fits right and seals off, and it should work fine. Let's see. Did we go over does condensation build up in your fuel tank if it's low? I don't think we did.
Not to any extent, but it does.
Yeah, and it can. And that's the thing is you got to get out and get them out and drive them. And if they're going to sit up any length of time, you need to put stable in them. They have a stable 360, which actually goes in and kind of coats and controls the condensation in the tank some as well.
Well, the gas tanks are actually coated on the interior with a coating that keeps them from rusting because they know, the factory knows they're going to condensate. You've got the difference in the temperature.
Right.
Right. That's how back in the older days when we had the solid cast steel wheel cylinder.
Right.
And then they'd pick up, how do you get water in there?
Right.
Well, that thing got red hot, 600-800 degrees, and as it was cooling off, condensation would go through the metal.
Yeah.
And that's how it's getting into the gas tank.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just a key thing. Like I say, if you don't have a heated garage to heated and cool garage to control the climate of your vehicle where it's stored, which a lot of people don't. You know, if you got a attached garage to your house, it's right. usually fairly warm and fairly cool during the summer. So all that's good, but a separate garage usually gets extremely hot, extremely cold. So you have to be real careful with them. But
you know what I brought up there again about those old cast iron wheel cylinders. Now we have all the real light aluminums, so they get more moisture in it. So that's why now we have to bleed all of the brakes down and change the brake fluid. And where back in the old days like that, we didn't have to.
Well, the key thing is we didn't know we needed to.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but and that's part of it. And
we didn't run the car 300,000 miles either.
Right. and it's something
100,000, they wow.
Yeah, and it's something that we've done on our race cars for years is, you may race them a couple times, and then it's time to bleed the brakes.
Sure.
And flush that
Well, now we did that, but I'm talking about driving grocery cars.
Well, and even though our brakes got to an extreme temperature, the your passenger car brakes get up to a pretty high temperature as well. Not to the extremes you do on a race car, but that extreme temperature change is what draws it in, and it's just something that needs to be done. And a lot of vehicles have it as part of their maintenance schedule to flush the brake system and change the fluid, and that get good clean fluid in there and get the old out with the moisture and that in it. They may even make dip strips that you can stick in there to check the moisture content.
Right.
So it's just a good idea to do. Yeah, because there's a whole bunch of expensive brake components.
Man, certainly don't want to get involved in an ABS system.
No. There's you can get into a couple grand worth of hydraulics on a brake system
in a heartbeat. Yes, sir.
If you don't take care of them. It looks like we've come up to our mid break. We're going to take a break, let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
Play the road, and the highway's our song. And every city's like the same three chords, been helping us along when the story's told. And the crowd is coming gone, shaking off the miles and trying to make it home. Every exit is a season, every signal is a beacon. And the wind, it carries me, and it eases up my load. Every day I drag the turns, every candle still burns. And every lesson I have learned brings us closer to the crowd. I'll play the road, and the highway is our song. And every city is like the same three chords, been helping us along when the story's told.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome to The Car Doctor Show. This is Kevin Raywinkle, Car Doctor, along with Tom Claxton.
And whoever that was calling needs to call back.
Yep, and we had a caller calling in. Looks like he's calling back, Charlie. Let's give him another shot.
All right, give him another shot.
Caller, are you with us?
Hello?
Yes.
You're on the radio.
You. What can we do for you? Hello? Lost you again.
He must have, maybe he's got the phone on mute. I don't know.
Yep. Heard him there for a second. But anyway. We're going to move on, I guess. And
let's talk a little bit about what this cold weather is going to do to our cars.
Well, that's one thing we need to talk about, a little bit of cold weather maintenance we need to do to our vehicles. But Charlie looks like he's trying again. Let's give him a shot and see if we can hear him this time.
Go ahead. You're on the car show.
Yes, sir. How you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
Great. Hey, I have a 1991 Ford F-350 dually with the dual gas tanks on it.
Yep.
And I can't switch over from one to the other.
tank.
Hmm.
What could be the issue with that?
Well, when you switch over, does the gas gauge switch over to the level of the other tank?
I repeat that one more time.
When you switch, when you turn, move the switch to the second tank, does the fuel level change to what's in that tank?
No,
sir. It does not change. Okay.
It does not move. No,
sir. Okay. So you've got an electrical problem going. You know, either it's either going to be the switch or the switching valve underneath the truck. It could be either. I'd have to look at the wiring diagram on that particular one. More than likely, that one uses the switching valve under the truck to, once it is electronically switched, then it picks up the fuel level on that side and turns that fuel pump on. So you're going to need to get that that switching valve checked underneath the truck. Now, whether it's the switch, a fuse, you know, those systems can be a little confusing to check. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of components, but they do have to work in a little strange manner.
Do you know that there's fuel in that other tank?
It's full.
Oh, it's full.
Yeah, it's full. Yeah.
Well, isn't that an indication then that if that, when that switch is flipped, if the fuel gauge went to the how much fuel is in that other tank, then we'd know that switch is all right and there's something wrong with the fuel pump. But since neither of those, it's not pumping and it's not showing on your dash, then he's got an electrical problem.
Well, and that's why I was asking whether the gauge went to whatever's in the second tank.
Yeah.
And was, you know, if all that switched over and it just didn't run off that side, then it could have been a fuel pump, but more than likely, I think you're going to have the switching valve underneath the truck, but it could also still be the wiring between or the switch and the dash. So
right, that valve has 6 liters on it. That's the one you're talking right between the gas tank.
Yeah, because it has to control all the vents and returns and the fuel feeds. So. So it's like I say, it's a little complicated on that switch on how it works. And they do fail. I've had them fail quite a bit. So it's a very good possibility that it's that switching valve.
Okay. All right, guys.
All right. I appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, it sounds like that's a job that he's going to need to get some professional help.
Well, and it would be best. You know, that's not one of those things you just want to throw parts at. You know, sometimes the switching valve can be a little expensive, so you know it may be better off to check
and
it first.
Besides, who wants to beg some parts store to sell them all those parts?
Right. Yeah, I don't think that's a problem. They don't have a problem selling pieces. We have one the other day that we had to correct, and we'll go over that one in a minute. But we do have another caller online. Caller, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what can we do for you?
I had a question for Kevin.
Okay, go ahead.
I've got a 2010 Tundra that's surging under load. I'm towing a trailer.
Yeah.
And every time I'm pulling anything where there's any kind of a load, it's about a 3-second surge and it'll back off and then it, you know, powers back up and it's.
Yeah.
I've tried to do fuel treatment and these sorts of things, but and I think that helps. But it's been consistent for a long time. Runs great, but it's under a load. It does this.
Yeah, and I assume you change fuel filters or anything like that.
I don't know if I have a. You know, it's injected, so if I have a fuel filter somewhere that's easy to change, I haven't done it. No.
Right, and there's. I don't know. Not all of them do. I know GM quit using inline fuel filters probably in about 04, 5, 6, somewhere in that area. But a lot of the imports still had them. So I would check to see if there's an inline filter. It's going to be underneath the truck somewhere. But see if there is one available for that truck. And that's one of the first things I would do would be to change that, because it sounds like you may have a fuel supply problem. That kind of rears its head when you put it under a little heavier load, so which kind of makes sense there.
I want to say I searched this one time, and you know, there was, of course, conversations, forums, and those sorts of things, but it maybe mentioned an oxygen sensor. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, the oxygen sensor really shouldn't matter whether it's loaded or unloaded. It doesn't know how hard that motor's working. All it knows is it's reading what's coming through the exhaust system.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, check your air filter, check your fuel filters. You know, it can easily be an injector, you know, not flowing properly. If your cleaner is actually helping it some, that's a possibility as well. But normally that will still give you an issue when you unload it. It's just not more noticeable with the load on it. One of the other things I'd want to look at is make sure the transmission is working properly, make sure the torque converter is not unlocking and then relocking, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, that you'd almost have.
When it downshifts, it doesn't tend to do it. You know, it'll be pulling up a hill or something like that. It does it really bad. It'll downshift, and that kind of corrects it.
Yeah. Yeah, you may have a converter that's coming and going. It'll slip and then come back. You may have to get someone to drive it that can kind of pinpoint a little more what's going on, that knows what to look for the converter issue. But it's, there again, it can still be, you know, something in fuel flow. Yeah. But, you know, like I say, also check your mass airflow, the connections, and make sure it's clean, make sure all your throttle body and their intake boot between the air filter and the throttle body is all in good shape, and the air cleaner's good and clean, because you'd be amazed what a dirty air filter will do for you. Yeah.
Okay.
All
right, man. I appreciate it. Good show. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I appreciate you calling in. But we got into, you know, we mentioned a little hot topic there a little minute ago about parts stores selling pieces. And we had one in the other day that the customer had gone to one of the box parts stores, and they checked code and had a PO306, I think, or it was a misfire for a specific cylinder. And they sold them plugs and wires and coils and injectors for this thing. And he boxed it all up, took it all home, bolted it all on, and it wouldn't run, period, you know, at that point. And it would crank and kind of run, but wouldn't run. And got to looking, and what we found wrong with the way it was running was that the injectors they gave him, one was the wrong injectors, and they were too short, wouldn't fit down in, wasn't reaching down into the intake properly, causing a huge vacuum leak. And to fix the problem, we ended up putting his old injectors back in it, and it run fine. So it was probably a plug or a wire.
But can't they look that up on a computer and give them the right part?
Yeah, they should. And, you know, it may have listed two. I don't really think so. I think they just, you know, hit the wrong number somehow, but which happens. And it, and that's not really the point. My point was that, you know, just because you got a code don't mean it's every part that can make that code come up.
Right. That is so true.
It could be something much simpler, much less expensive, and you're better off not letting them diagnose. You'd be surprised how often we get, I've already had the diagnostic done, so I don't need to get it done here. They AutoZone or Advance or whoever, you know, did the diagnosis. No, they did not do a diagnosis. They gave you a code.
Yeah, they checked codes.
They checked codes, and they sold you whatever parts or told you whatever.
That's why they have that code checker.
Exactly.
They sold millions and jillions of dollars worth of parts with that code checker.
Yeah. One of my pet peeves.
They're lucky enough every now and then, you know, if one little part or whatever, we'll fix it. But then on the majority of the time, people are back up there trying to get return on the parts.
Right.
And if you install them and put them in that vehicle and they still don't work, they're not going to want to take them back.
Oh, no, they're not going to take them back. And if they'd actually gave them right injectors, it would have fixed the car.
Right.
But, you know, but they didn't need all that either. So anyway, we're going to have to take a break here and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back after these messages.
till I hold you once again. Thank God for the radio when I'm on the road, when I'm far from home, feeling blue. Thank God for the radio playing all night long, playing all the songs that mean so much to me.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. Have any questions, give us a call, 343-0106, or send us a text at same number. We started to get into some things we need to check and do for our vehicles in this colder weather, since it looks like it's here for a little while, maybe, this week anyway. But it's going to be coming and going for the rest of the winter, I'm sure.
Glad we're not up in the Smokies.
Yeah, I'm not. I like watching it on TV, but that's about as close as I want to get to it. Yeah.
I know some people that go up in the Smokies and get up into Gatlinburg and all on this kind of weather.
Yeah.
Because they want to be up there for the bad weather.
Yeah, no.
No, you know. Mm-hmm.
Get snowed in, then you got an excuse not to come back to work.
Really. That's right. But
most of those little old cottages and condos that I saw up in there when I was up in that area is up a hill, and you get a little ice and snow up there, you're not going to get out or get back up there anyway.
Getting up and down those driveways is tough.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
Even on foot.
Yep, and I'm not going to do it on foot anyway.
No.
All right, but anyway, we get in the wintertime, we get temperatures from somewhere around 28 degrees up until about 50-something degrees. We need to start checking tire temperatures, tire pressures too.
That's the thing is, we need to get, when we get to this cold weather, we need to check our tire pressures. We need to check our antifreeze coverage. We need to have our batteries checked. We need to make sure we don't have just straight water in our windshield washers. Windshield wipers need to be in good shape. Make sure the cooling system is topped off full and the heater's working properly. There's nothing much more miserable than trying to get in a car that the windshield's froze up in. The heater doesn't work, and you can't thaw out the windshield for nothing to get where you need to go.
And you don't need to go put a bunch of hot water or whatever on that windshield.
That same thing, Tom.
Yeah. Don't pour hot water on it because you're gonna break the windshield.
Right.
It's just not a good idea. I mean, lukewarm. Room temperature. Yeah.
Warm water is one thing. Hot water is something else.
Yeah, 60-70 degree water is gonna melt the ice just fine. So, but it looks like we do have another caller on the phone. Caller, you with us?
Hey, Kevin.
Hey,
I have a car that I drive less than 500 miles a year, maybe even less than that.
But, right.
And I show it. But my question is, should I follow the prescribed mileage in terms of changing the oil, or is there a condensation issue since I don't drive it very much, and should I change it like once a year? Or what do you recommend?
Yeah, and that's pretty much where I'm at with my stuff that doesn't get used a whole lot is a change at least once a year, regardless of how many miles. I change everything I have at 3,000 miles, but if you're not getting anywhere near there, change at least once a year, because you do have condensation building up in that crankcase and contaminants, and just need it's cheap insurance to go ahead and change and get it good fresh oil in it and sure you're keeping it alive. I assume if you're showing it, it's a classic car of some sort, but we need to keep those things on the road.
I love my classics.
Yeah, love my classic vehicles for sure.
I'm classic.
So,
thanks very much.
Yep, I appreciate you calling and listening. But
you get my age, you're classic.
Yeah, we'll call.
I can get an antique tag.
He's been called worse than a classic, so I mean, I guess we'll go with classic. That works. So,
yeah, you're not gonna get the cherry, whatever you call me, baby.
You're a seasoned citizen.
I'm a seasoned vegetable.
Yeah. Let's see. We have a another text message here. My 2002 RAV4 calls for 4.4 quarts of oil. Can I substitute 1 quart of that for Lucas? Yeah, I don't have any problem with that. You know, it's a good oil and or a good additive. You know, if you're not really having problems with it, you don't really need to. You know, just good oil change intervals.
He doesn't indicate, you know, or they don't indicate the mileage, do they?
No, but you know, if it's if it's a really high mileage motor, it wouldn't hurt to have it in there. But if you're, you know, less than 200,000 miles and no issues with smoking or oil usage, that kind of thing, just good straight oil is fine. You know, it does well. So you can save yourself the money on that. But you know, there's we don't have in these motors, we don't have the wear factors that we, you know, have on the earlier ones with the flat tablet lifters and that kind of thing that needs the zinc and that the additives that a Lucas and that has in it. So not necessarily, you know, something you really have to do unless you're having some kind of issues or whatever, but it won't hurt it. It won't hurt a thing.
No, so, it won't hurt it.
Yeah, but, you know, we're you know, we were talking about our cars in the winter, and I was reading something the other day, and they were talking about you don't need to crank your car and let it sit in idle because it's bad on it, because it's going to, you know, fuel gets by the rings, gets down in the crankcase, and all this kind of stuff, you know. And they were talking about a classic car, apparently.
Yeah, well, I was fixing to say, what year of car are they talking about?
Right. You know, the fuel-injected cars do not have an issue with that,
right?
If they're running properly, because they're controlled much better,
right? Right.
You know, so we don't really have an issue with that anymore. If it's a carbureted car, yeah, it can be an issue. But there again, if the choke is set properly and it's running the way it's supposed to run, then it's still not an issue.
Well, if you're going to crank it up in the car, even a car like that, then the idea is that you need to crank it up and let it run long enough that everything in it gets up to 180 degrees or whatever the thermostat is set on it, and let it run there for a while, so that if you're trying to get the condensation and all out of the that is accumulated in the oil, it's got to get hot enough that it boils that out of the oil,
right?
And let it PCV valve, you know, the crankcase ventilation system, pull the vapors out of it, which pulls all of the moisture out of it,
right?
And that's why you would want to do that.
Yeah.
If you're just doing it to charge your battery, buy a battery charger.
You know, and you know, this time of year, we're trying to get our heaters heated up to where we get in it, the car's comfortable. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I use the remote start on mine every morning, you know. It's awful nice to climb in.
Does Big Boy get cold?
Well, not if I got my remote start going.
Not if you got your remote.
Not if I crank it up ahead of time and let it run.
The coolant, if you got a top-off coolant, whether you go to the store, the box store, or whatever, and buy the coolant, do you want to buy straight coolant or do you want to buy the mixture?
If you're just topping off, buy the mixture. You know,
is that okay?
It's fine. You know, because it'll help you keep a 50-50 mix in your cooling system, and you won't get overloaded, because you know straight coolant is not good and straight water is not good, so you need to try and keep that mix.
You got
to
have the mix.
Yeah, so it's definitely the right way to go. But you know, we're coming up towards the end of our show, and I just want to mention UJ Chevrolet. We've got a large selection of cars. We're trying to move them here for the end of the year. They're making some really good deals on trucks, cars. You know, some of the rebates I've seen on the trucks are just really incredible.
Unbelievable.
But we've got a lot of the 18s still on the lot.
They're still really brand new trucks.
Well, they've got them there on purpose, because they have the big rebates on them.
And they've got awesome warranties.
Make a good deal.
Still have all the warranties.
Yeah, it's full factory
awesome
warranty.
Awesome buy.
So, low mileage.
Well, I mean, there's no miles. I mean, they're brand new vehicles. It's, you know, 2 to 10 miles. Now's the time to buy. It's the end of the year. They're trying to move them out of there. And
will y'all provide a bow for the top of them?
I'm sure they'll work something out with you. Shoot, I promise you. So they will work something out with you. But you know, it looks sounds like we're coming up to the end of our show. I want to appreciate it. Tell everybody I appreciate you listening to the show. And keeping us on the air for all these years. And
good calls tonight.
Yes, yep, a lot of great listeners.
Glad
and,
to be able to help some of the people. Yes,
yeah, that's what we're here for. Tomer and I don't make we don't make a living doing this.
No, sir.
We do it because we enjoy it, and it's trying to provide a service for the community. But right. Thank you for listening to the show.
And to all of our veterans out there,
hoorah! Too much to believe. You know he always got an extra pack of cigarettes rolled up in his t-shirt sleeve. He got a tattoo on his arm, I say, baby. He got another one that just say, hey. But every Sunday afternoon he is a dirt track demon in a 57 Chevrolet.